big vector ass on my Instagram feed this morning. Hi everyone, we're back. We took a long break. I'm your regular host, Jaren Vrietenworven, and I'm here with
Jemima Vaughan.
And this episode, we're gonna talk about alegría. Yeah, alegría, which means joy in Spanish, also known as big corporate art style.
You'll be happy to know that I think this episode will be a bit more like straightforward and actually about art, because a little insider secret, we actually already recorded this episode, but we had some technical difficulties.
As always.
So we had to our practice. We, got all of the random chat out. So I think we're going to go straight into it. Right?
Yeah. Maybe a little update on what we did the weeks that we weren't here in like the podcast atmosphere.
The podcast world.
Yeah, how is it the podosphere?
The podosphere.
I think
everyone who follows our podcast should just kind of realize that occasionally we just like
zone out,
go into a bit of, you know, depression. And then we don't post for a while, but that happens, and then, you know, we come back. I don't think anyone
stronger
right now is thriving in the pandemic, especially because it's winter.
Yeah,
there's not a lot of light.
I mean, it was also good. I don't feel great, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, I'm happy that we took the break, because we could also realize which direction we kind of wanted to go into with the pod. And I think that's also really important to like get your facts straight and all that. Yeah. Also, January just sucks.
Yeah, January.
All my homies hate January.
Month. Sorry to all my January-born friends, but it's not
we all
a great
hate
month.
It. Yeah, you kind of suck for being born in January.
It's all your fault.
So yeah, I guess that's an update on our side.
Hira's actually been really busy.
Yeah, true.
She's been working
on a project.
Secret project. We'll post about it on the Instagram page.
It's not really secret anymore. I mean, it was about an institution that changed its name because of the old
racism
name having colonial ties. And yeah, I was a part of the process. It was funny. Haha. We laugh. We cry. We made some money. That's all I'm gonna say about it.
Yahaira is now a big art influence because she's in an Efflux article, which is big, and we're very excited about it.
Yes,
and there's also going to be a video which we will probably post on our Instagram. You get to see Yahaira in a suit, which is very nice. So yeah, I would recommend watching it.
A beautiful green suit.
It's real business moves.
Woo. And Jemima, you're getting published in two magazines. Am I right?
Yep.
When is that happening?
I think at the end of this month, they're going into print. Or at least one of them is. But I will probably post it on the Instagram as well, because we basically just use the Sport Broth to kind of promote our own other projects that are going on as well.
I mean, and we're multifaceted girls, so of course we need to promote our site.
Yes, multifaceted working ladies.
Yeah, we're just weighing it. But yeah, for today's episode, we want to talk about Alegría. Am I saying it correct? Yeah, right?
Yes, Alegría. I think so. In our first recording, we actually weren't pronouncing it right, so it's actually a lot. It's great that we're re-recording because we can actually pronounce it correctly this time and not sound like we didn't read
like bimbos,
you know, and research for this episode, which we did.
Yeah, we actually did a lot of research. But yeah, we're going to talk about Alegría, which is an art style designed by a Brooklyn-based firm called Buck. And it's the main art style for Facebook.
So in 2017, Facebook came out in the news that they were involved in a lot of shady things, which we'll talk about later in the podcast in more detail. But they essentially started a rebranding process, and they hired this design firm called Buck. And Alegría, we decided like it'd be a good idea to give you a little context in case you haven't seen it, but you have probably seen it. The illustrations are flat, minimal, brightly colored. They don't typically have any like texture or depth to them. They've got really long arms and legs, and they're supposed to be never static. Like they're always in motion. They're dancing or painting or running or hugging. And this company Book essentially created these vector-based images, and they're supposed to signal like positivity, connectedness, a general, like I've written in my notes, a pseudo politically correct kind of strategy for kind of visualizing happiness
and diversity, like inclusion and diversity, and that everyone is basically welcome.
They're generally designed for expression instead of individual identity. So the style is showing up everywhere. You've probably seen it on Airbnb, YouTube, Hinge, Lyft, Google. I mean, this morning on my Instagram, I didn't note the company who had posted it, but I even saw an advert. I sent it to Yahira, an advert for like BDSM, but it was in this Alegría style, which was interesting. Got to see a big vector ass on my Instagram feed this morning with like a paddle underneath it. Bit weird, but you know, it's basically everywhere. And actually it's interesting because people who even aren't interested in art styles are beginning to recognize it. You've probably seen like there's been a lot of memes as well about hating this art style, and it's called Alegría, but it's also dubbed corporate Memphis, Globo Homo, which is fun to say, and it's also just generally called the big tech art style.
I'm a Globo Homo, by the way.
Globo Homo.
I am a Globo Homo. Maybe we should make merch. Globo Homo.
Globo Homo. I would wear that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny
like
word.
Like a white pube ripoff, like instead of critical, it's just Globo Homo in like Arial.
All our fans are from now on called Globo Homos. If you're a fan of the Spoiler Broth, you're called Globo Homo.
I love that.
Yeah, me too.
There's some practical answers to why this style is popping up everywhere. And it's partly because Book actually set out a really simple set of rules for how to create these illustrations. And because the style lends itself to standardization and replication, it means that multiple illustrators can work on it at once. And there's no kind of individual style involved. The characters can remain consistent because they're just based in simple shapes. So, you know, there's no kind of individual mark that's being left on these illustrations. Alongside this, flat minimalism corporations love it because they can pay designers less because the styles are less decorated. There's less time that's gone into it. And corporations don't want to pay artists.
As usual.
Nobody wants to pay artists, let's be honest. The amount of times that people have asked me for free
labor for exposure.
Yeah. Flat design's ultimate goal is to ensure that graphic elements work well in various digital displays. So the image looks the same no matter like where you're viewing it from, like a tiny Apple Watch screen to a huge like digital banner or advertisement. And this kind of approach towards design is like a rejection of something called skeuomorphism, which was a trend in the 2000s. And it's essentially like you can notice it, especially through like old iPhone interfaces.
Yeah.
Through things like the news app was like, it used to be an actual like
the old YouTube
news stand.
The old YouTube app was also an old radio in the begin periods of iPhone.
Oh, I forgot remember about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before
skeuomorphism is like trying to depict things as they realistically are. So it's kind of the opposite of this trend of flat design. Yeah, building on from that, flat design is all about embracing the nature of the digital platform, which Allegria does really well, because information has to be immediately understandable. And because there's no text involved and these figures aren't very detailed, you can really easily understand what kind of emotion they're trying to display, what action or movement they're trying to depict. According to art historian Ernst Gombrich, is that pronounced correct? Bihara is my official pronunciation checker.
Name, so I think it's Gombrich, but I'm not sure.
Here we go.
Dude, who cares?
Open quotes. Every artistic movement in history is a mirror of the era's preoccupations. So if we take this into our case, the golden age of Allegria speaks to our obsession with technology, speed, and survival.
Maybe also like this, we're all the same, inclusion, there's no hierarchy kind of thing that we're trying to embody in this age as well. I think you also see that in a lot of workspaces now, that the boss will often say, we're working horizontally, so everyone is on the same level. Yet in reality, that's obviously not the case, because you can't have a horizontal working space, not completely at least. And I think,
especially if you look into the paychecks as well, you'll soon realize that it's not horizontal at all. There's definitely a hierarchy going on.
But I think that's also like something that Allegria really portrays, kind of this like, we're all the same, we're all having fun, life is so nice. So kind of ignoring all the flaws that we're still having in our society, basically, which is something that I think is really happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Following on from that, like Allegria, it avoids the issue of representation in illustration, which companies love, because there has been this issue that has more recently come up of like, you know, where are the black bodies in the media that we consume? But Allegria avoids that because it doesn't have any kind of body types that, you know, people actually have. Like anyone can see themselves reflected in the illustrations because they aren't, you know, they're humanistic, but they're not really
realistic,
you know? Yeah. Like most of them are kind of orange and purple and green. So they can be read into however the viewer wants to, which is perfect for a company that's trying to appeal to everyone and sell to, you know, a huge market. I think it's really interesting because it's like, it's not really new. Like the art style kind of in 2017, like has had this name coined to it, but minimalism has existed for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, these kind of illustrations are, I think, similar to kind of work by Matisse, like Matisse's paper collage cutouts.
It's really like a return of Matisse, but in a really weird, non-artsy way. But then we're having the discussion about what is art, and we should not get into that right now.
I think it like brings up kind of an idea of it not being arty, just because one, it has a commercial basis, which is interesting because I still think like Matisse obviously created work to sell work.
Yeah. So I know this graphic designer who in my circles designed for a company, and the company just couldn't pay for the design that he had made. He just never got paid. That's basically the baseline.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And then it's not even that much, because like what they couldn't pay him was 5,000 euros, which is relatively low. I mean, if you think about it. But it sucks because he needs that money to support himself. And I think
it's kind of funny. I think that all kind of sums of money feel so much bigger to, especially like young designers and artists. Like when we get paid a fair amount, we're like, oh my gosh, that's so much. I'm so rich. But it's just because we're not used to having like a regular pay or, you know, any kind of fair pay really for the work that we put in. And most of us downplay the amount of hours that we put into work.
Exactly. Because that's what I wanted to say. Like, if you think about it, a normal hourly pay, like, in a lot of companies, especially if you're if you have a higher education, etc., etc., would be about between 1,500 to 2,000 on the higher end. So let's say 1,500. So if you think about 5,000 euros for a design campaign which you works on for at least a year.
Yeah.
Is, let me grab my
your calculator.
Yeah.
I think following on though about the conversation,
it's 3 months
like,
worth of 3 months. Yeah. About 3 to 4 months. So if you're working on an assignment for over a year and you're being paid 5,000 euros, it's nothing. And it's insane that we then think, oh shit, that's a lot of money. So, I mean, and if you think from about it from that perspective, then probably the people who make or made Alegría, they...
Correct Spanish pronunciations only, please.
they probably like graphic designing. So then they're doing it for enjoyment, so it's art.
Well, this is, I think it's less a conversation about enjoyment and if the person, you know, is an artist, depending on if they enjoy it or if they're just doing it for money. And if that's the validity, I guess, of their practice. But I think, I don't know, a text that I've been reading at the minute, which I keep putting off reading, but it's really short. So I'd recommend anyone to read it. But it's called The Work of Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction. It's by Walter Benjamin.
And how short is it?
It's like 100 and something pages.
Oh, okay.
It's more like a long essay.
Yeah, okay.
It's like a cornerstone of art school reading. I think probably everyone's read it. But in the text... I mean, it was published originally in 1935, so it talks a lot about how art has become, due to mechanical reproduction, art has lost its aura. And he talks about the aura of painting and how there's this like mystical aura behind painting because it's like this object that actually has a handicraft behind it and this kind of, you know, this human touch to it. And I think why we have this kind of disconnection with design, perhaps, and maybe illustration that's done for mass corporations is because it's not been, I mean, in a sense, it's been mechanically like reproduced. Like, it's not in the sense of like the same sense as Walter Benjamin talks about in terms of like, I mean, he was writing it in terms of like the invention of the printing press and lithography. So like everything could be mass produced, but it's like, with Alegria, like it's like multiple designers can work on it at once. It's not got like an individual author behind it. It's also mm-hmm. an art style that's like mass reproduced, and it's also produced via, you know, programs like Illustrator and Photoshop. So yeah. It doesn't have the kind of hand, I don't know, it doesn't have the individuality of being made. You can't see the hand.
No, and that just makes it boring.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation. Like, where does the worth of art and kind of like, where does its kind of genuineness lie when it's produced
in mass?
Yeah, in mass, and also when it's produced online.
Yeah.
Because there's this kind of disconnect with how we view it, I guess, because we're viewing it sort of on our phones. And
it's also an art style that you're not actively like, you know, like for Matisse, for example, you have to go to a museum to see the Matisse. You can look up pictures, but you're actively looking to a picture of a Matisse. And with Alegria, it's kind of like you just get confronted with it day in, day out. Without
yeah, it's kind of like it's non-comparable consent. In the terms that like we define, you know, fine art as being different even from illustration or like commercial illustration, even though like visually it might be quite similar. I mean, it's interesting, like the way that we interact with the art completely can change our kind of view of it, even though they're really quite similar.
Yeah.
I think what's one thing me and Yahara, like we both talked about with Alegria, is that we actually don't hate the art style that much.
Correction, I do.
I say that much, but I think what, or at least I don't hate it that much. I think what bothers me is the repetition of it and just the fact that you see it everywhere. Like, it's so saturated the point that everyone notices it now.
Yeah,
it's not natural to see it anymore, because when you see it, you're like, oh, there are those like gangly people again.
No, I really dislike it. I've given it some more thought and I realized
now you're actively anti Alegria.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and not actively anti. So not actively anti what Buck made, because I think what Buck made for them, it's like this huge thing and they like it and yada, 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 whatever. I think what I dislike, and that's also like kind of like continuing on what we were speaking on before, that all of the illustrators that I know now are now illustrating in this art style without realizing that they're just doing that because it sells, because they think they're like individually choosing, making this, and that they're fine art artists waiting for an exhibition or something to show this dumbass art style that has been used like a million times. And whether you give your own twist to it, it's still the same type of like art style. It's the same huge hands, huge head. It makes me feel like uncomfortable that these people don't realize that what they're doing is something that they have been indoctrinated with, actually. And especially if you look like at our age group, we grew up on like the internet, so we have obviously been indoctrinated and inspired by the internet. And that's a good thing, because you can see a lot of different stuff, but at the same time, it's kind of like, I think it can be a bad thing when everyone starts doing the same, which is happening now. And I also think like the motivation behind the art style is just like something that I really dislike, because like you said before, Facebook is a very untrustworthy company, and this whole art style was basically a ploy to make people believe in Facebook again after the Cambridge Analytica scandal, which for everyone who doesn't know was a huge data breach situation where a lot of our data was sold and misused to create profiles and actively try to influence our voter decisions, which is huge and has like huge real world implications. And that's the moment where we should have started realizing that the internet and the way social media companies are operating right now is not that that shouldn't be legal. I mean, I recently heard a podcast episode from Reply All from Gimlet about this guy who designed the pop-up ad and that he regrets it, but not because the pop-up ad is really annoying, but because he said, if I, at that point where they asked me to design a new type of ad, said, no, I don't know how to do this, maybe we could have come to a new like way of paying for websites and paying for the internet without paying with our data. And that's actually his biggest regret, not creating the pop-up ad, which is really annoying, but creating a situation in which our data gets sold. And I think that speaks a lot to like what's happening and that people who are in the business are actually regretful.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think it's interesting, like you say, about with the illustrators who are now creating, like young illustrators who are kind of creating work in the style of Alegria. I think, especially if you're knowledgeable about the kind of history behind this art style, it's interesting thinking about kind of like, has Alegria become so synonymous with Facebook and then by that become so synonymous with like their bad behavior, their data stealing, you know, their involvement in essentially like electing people like Donald Trump and other terrible political
things. And conspiracy
things, like,
theory.
The conspiracy whole theories, like, you know, spreading that kind of misinformation. At the same time, it's like they created something. They did create it for Facebook, so that's why I'm saying, like, I don't really feel sorry for them or whatever. But it's interesting that then perhaps people, like young illustrators, see this art style, see that it's doing well, see that it's in trend because it's through all of our adverts and stuff that we're bombarded with all the time. And then they're just like, okay, this is what works. It's also like a style that you can easily get into because it's easy
to
make.
It looks diverse.
Like, you can easily learn how to make some shapes on Illustrator and it's quite simple. But yeah, has the art style essentially been ruined by corporations?
Not even only by definitely by corporations, because like I don't want to, because what they're selling me with these, because it's always about selling. This whole thing is always about selling. And what they're selling me is, look at everyone being the same and being, you know, the diverse society, the feminist society we all want to live in. That's basically what they're selling me. But that's not like nothing on Facebook or Instagram, except for maybe people who are on there, is that, you know?
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with the companies or the, you know, the actual website at all. It's all to do with the people who are actually on it.
Yeah, I mean, and also like, I don't, like, Facebook doesn't spark joy per se, you know?
You get Marie Kondo on us right now.
No, but I think, like, I use it because of, like, I want to go to an event and I want to know how late it is.
I think that's why kind of everyone uses Facebook. The thing is, Facebook is kind of dying out. And like, but the thing is, we're all now moving, like, I mean, or most people moved to Instagram a while ago. But I mean, Instagram's also owned by Facebook. It's actually insane that all of these social media platforms are basically owned by the same company. Like, how is that even legal? The amount of data. And it's scary because, I mean, I definitely grew up on the internet. Like growing up, I didn't, my family didn't have a TV. So I think my parents thought that that would mean that I was like, you know, spending time in nature and reading books and stuff. But it didn't. It just meant that I spent all my time on Club Penguin.
Same, just not Club membership. Penguin.
I had Club Penguin membership for 3 years.
Nice.
I wrote in my diary once, I will never stop playing Club Penguin, which my siblings always hold against me because I obviously don't play Club Penguin anymore. RIP when Disney bought it. But it's like, I mean, also, I grew up on the internet as well. I definitely learned things that I shouldn't have learned at such a young age from the internet. And it's scary.
Same.
I mean, I know children, like family members who are like, you know, 9 years old and they're on TikTok and like some of the stuff that you're exposed to on TikTok, on YouTube, not to sound like an old lady, but like it's not
weird.
Appropriate.
No.
It's really
but
weird.
Also, like,
and like from a young age, we're selling all this information, not selling it, but we're giving all this information
but
about
not
ourselves
even that,
freely.
Like, what I think is like the worst is that from such a young age, they're collecting data. I mean, I've seen weird shit on internet from a very young age. And I mean, I am definitely mentally unstable. I mean, it's not like it completely ruined me. You know what I mean?
No, definitely not. I mean, getting, you know, back onto topic, but like not to be too conspiracy theory-ish, because I mean, every living in modern society, like everywhere you go, you leave a kind of information trail. Like, you know, when you're born, you are put on a register. Like, you know, there's no way, and I don't think we should be necessarily be scared of kind of, you know, giving information about ourselves away. But it just, it's interesting that
there should be more transparency.
Yeah, definitely. There definitely should be more transparency. And like the stuff that we're going to get into with, you know, Facebook's like scandals. It's kind of funny calling them scandals because it's not like they're not like James Charles, you know, not wearing a mask. It's like this is really important. Like obviously, you know, this is a bit more elevated, but like you know,
it's a bigger issue.
Yeah.
It's like interesting because like these things are actual issues, but we're so trained into like understanding and believing and knowing that Facebook and all other social media are selling our data that we are actually kind of like whatever whenever such a scandal breaks out. Well, this is a way bigger issue than a lot of issues that we're tackling right now. I mean, honestly, like I said before about my hatred for Kamala Harris, I don't care that she's a Black South Asian woman. Like, I don't care. If there's a better person that's white, male, and old, but will break up Facebook or will address these issues, I would rather have them. But we're so focused on, like, these minor thingies, like getting a woman into the White House or tackling the way we talk to each other. Let's first start trying to tackle these huge corporations, which are getting bigger and bigger, and we start focusing more and more on tiny topics. What are we doing? Like, honestly, I recently saw this whole discussion on like a subreddit about microaggression, but like it went on and on and on for like 2 weeks. This whole subreddit was just like swarmed about conversations about microaggression. And of course it's an issue, but is that like the biggest issue we need to address right now when there's still a lot of other stuff going on, like actual big ass racist structures or there are so many other things that we can talk about, yet we choose to talk about stuff that we don't care. Like that's what I feel with Facebook as well. Why are people not talking about the fact that Facebook owns almost everything and sells almost everything or probably everything?
Yeah.
So how is this not an issue? How are people not scared, or not per se scared, but like pissed that your phone can be, that Facebook can record you while you're having sex? Like, that's something that I don't want.
Yeah. And I want to just preface as well, because like me, well, Yahara and I are not conspiracy theorists, and we wouldn't talk about this stuff if it was like kind of up in the air and like if it wasn't proven. And it's also not really to incite fear in people, because I don't think we should be scared. I just think we should be more aware and and also aware of how, for example, like they use art styles to kind of manipulate us. And I mean, it's kind of what graphic design does in general, but that sounds really bad about graphic design, but
but it's true. I mean, a lot of graphic design, especially corporate graphic design, is made to sell you something, which is also like an issue in general, like how we, especially like I think from the generation Gen X till now, have been so indulged in like constantly being sold stuff and products that then turn out to be shit, that we're all just really like, we don't care. My point on this conversation for a very long time was, I've been on Facebook since I was 7, so they basically know everything about me, so why would I delete my Facebook profile now? And I think a lot of people like who have been growing up on the internet, growing up with like stuff being sold to them every day, constantly, are kind of like so detached from this.
Well, actually, I wanted to credit this article by Rachel Hawley on the Ion Design website. And I wanted to quote a part of that article, actually, because I thought it was just written really well. Like many Alegria-style illustration systems, it's hard to scroll through the cheerful cooperative figures in Airbnb's case study and not be filled with a sort of utopian optimism. Human connection, mutually beneficial transactions. That Airbnb is currently involved in a nationwide lobby battle to get out of paying taxes it owes to local governments across the country is an inconvenient aside, and one that has no place in any Alegria adjacent paradise.
Yeah, great. Like, Airbnb is such a shit company, honestly. And like, no, for real, I think it's like similar to Starbucks, you know, how Starbucks became like super trendy and super hip, and then it turned out that Starbucks hadn't been paying taxes in like forever, basically, since
and
they became
exploiting hip. Like their workers who pick their you know, and grow their coffee for them.
Yeah. And their workers
in their
shops
stores
as well.
Yeah.
Because like you pay €7 for a coffee.
That's not that great.
But they are paid like €5 an hour. It's insane. It's like bizarre.
And it's not even with Facebook, it's not even just the Cambridge Analytica scandal, but also Facebook had a role in inciting genocidal violence in Burma. And really this is why like Alegria exists, because it just, the company needed a facelift. And now other companies are realizing this and that it's kind of working and it's creating this kind of utopia for people.
And no one cares anymore.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. It's also like, I feel that like, what I think is like the worst effects of this thing, Like, aside from the fact that a lot of young designers are doing this, I think the worst is that people who are in these social justice movements are now trying to sell us Black Lives Matter or feminist statements
using the same art style. Like, can we need a different visualization for this? Like, please do not associate this art style with, you know, movements like Black Lives Matter. We don't want to see it.
It's gross. It's just gross. But also, like, I think the reason why a lot of people are like disliking Black Lives Matter as a movement also is because it became so commercialized by these dumb internet illustrators such as Impact. These are Instagram accounts. Impact, Feminism, Change, which are, by the way, all owned by a collective of three white guys who are just trying to make money of these social movements, while the Black Lives Matter inner core, like, organizers turn out to be Marxist or interested in Marxist theory type of people who are just trying to uplift their own community and stop violence. And now it suddenly became this, like, Alegria type of, oh, we should really think about diversity type of
using
story
an art style
where we have
that
to
really doesn't actually, you know, represent diversity at all.
Exactly. And it's suddenly the movement starts talking about supporting Black businesses, which is like also a really weird type of talking about these social issues. And
yeah, I think
like,
it's kind of like, it's tough to kind of work, I don't know, to kind of even discuss around it, because as someone who's like interested in, like you said, like Marxist theory and things, like, yeah, it feels icky to me that it's kind of a double, you can tell, like, I don't really know where I stand with it, because on one side it's like, yeah, you got to sell things to survive. But on the other hand, I'm still just upset that, like, that's our existence.
Reality.
I'm just disappointed.
Yeah. And just for me, it feels a lot like, especially when we talk about like support Black businesses type of conversations, that it starts ignoring other problems which also involve Black or brown bodies.
There's
so
plenty of Black businesses who still produce their products by slave labor.
That's what I'm trying
and
to
so
say.
Is it really a good thing if you're supporting
a
Black business?
No, because you're still exploiting Black or brown bodies. Yeah. Just different Black or brown bodies. Not in the USA or not in Europe, but they're still being exploited. So, and that's also what I was trying to say about why are we not focusing on bigger issues such as Facebook, but also like Alegria seems to like downplay all these bigger issues that are at play and just talk about identity politics and just start conversations about stuff that is relevant but not the most relevant. I mean, I'd rather have a conversation about how we stop exploiting people than selling clothes in an H&M all the same gender. Like, girl, I don't fucking care. It's H&M. It's a shit show anyways. Let's like move the fuck on and start talking about actual issues. I mean, how can you make like a huge issue when there are people, like actual queer people on the streets being killed? Also, this one is directed at, like, I don't know, everyone. Just why? Why? When trans women in America are still the most, like, their average age is like 35. Come on. What is going on here? But I also think it's for a lot of people a way to avoid talking about actual issues. And I think it's also like a lot of these like allies who want to not address the actual issue of trans people being killed. we need to think about how are we going to create environments in which trans people can actually be safe. And then you're being sold like bullshit, pseudo, yeah, just dumb shit online, dumb infographics with Allegria, which are only tackling how do you say sweet things to trans people without being offensive? Like, okay, let's, or how do you say sweet things to black people without being offensive? Girl, of course I don't like it when someone called me calls me their Moco Chocolata Princesa. Of course, that sucks. And I'm like, sure, that's correct. You shouldn't do that. It's gross. But like, yeah, I don't know. It's not the main issue. And we're being sold these issues by Allegria. But we're going
off to topic here.
Dark, dark place.
Did you read more about the Cambridge Analytica scandal?
Well, it's a very complicated scandal. So I don't completely understand it myself either. But it's actually what I understood, an issue that started in 2013 by this guy. I think his last name was Barr with double R. And he claimed to know who Anonymous was. So, of course he didn't. Like Anonymous as in the Hacksivist group. Of course he didn't. So Anonymous hacked his computer, downloaded all of his databases, and then deleted them for him. So he lost basically all his files and emails and all that. So they went through his emails, and it turned out that they were basically planning this thing, which later became known as the Cambridge Analytica scandal. Basically, him trying to like talk about how, with data being sold, how you can then influence people and create like what we now call the algorithm that like then throws us into a very passionate rabbit hole of things we don't like.
The Cambridge Analytica is a political data analysis firm that worked on the 2016 Trump campaign. And their advantage is that they have enough data points on every American to build extensive personality profiles, which then its clients can buy that information and leverage psychographic targeting of ads.
Yeah. So in easier terms, they can buy your information and influence your voter behavior, because that's what happened. Because then in the 2015 primaries and 2016 elections, but also in the Brexit vote, Cambridge Analytica sold data to multiple parties, which then influenced advertisement on Facebook.
I think it's scary because if you are, you know, of, I don't know how to word this, if you're of like a right-wing persuasion, or if you're like interested in like terrible things like conspiracy theories, then you're naturally like you're going to be shown stuff that you are inclined to read, which means that actually even if you're not that strong in these beliefs, you're just going to be shown more of that same thing.
Okay, but that's like, because what they then found out is that it works both sides. So and I started realizing this last year when I kind of like left the identity politics bullshit in the past and started moving forward in my future. I realized that a lot of the news and a lot of the articles that were recommended to me were actually about these stuff. But when I started looking for information about other things, things I was actually interested in, it took way longer to find. And when I started finding things, suddenly a lot of it popped up. If you think about it, so we're on both sides being influenced. We're on both sides being targeted with information that is basically turning us against each other. So that's also the conversation that we were having earlier in private about how right now it's like fascism against socialism, or not even, but like that's how it's presented. But in reality, like this central political movement is taking the win constantly, because we are constantly fighting each other and not fighting like billionaires or actual people who do actual shits, because we're fighting people who are also mad instead of fighting the people that we're mad at, like Elon Musk. Maybe we should fight him. I think in general, we should not like even start talking about regulating on Facebook or whatever, but we should start talking about how we want to govern the internet. Like, we have been putting off this conversation for as long as that the internet exists, which is almost 40 years. And maybe it's time that we're starting to have this conversation, because unless we start doing something about this, this will happen over and over and over again. And like, on one point, I'm kind of like, you know what, whatever, we're heading to this surveillance state, and I guess that's the way we want to go. But on the other hand, I'm kind of like, yeah, I just don't want Facebook to incite violence in Burma. I also don't want Facebook to interfere with voting results, and I also really don't want Facebook to listen in on my personal conversations, which they're probably doing right now.
I mean, this is just like a discussion about the kind of issue, because obviously we don't have the answers.
No.
Like, I think we would be in a different position if we did. But in regards to Alegria, it's kind of in conclusion, like, it's less to do with the kind of aesthetic than it really has to do with kind of the harmful corporations which use it to implement this kind of idea of happy, you know, trustworthy and cheerfulness, like minimalism. But it's really, you know, we know these companies are most of the time have evil intentions. Like, that's like kind of the that's it, really.
Yeah.
And so we kind of have to work out like where we draw the line, and maybe just be a bit more conscious about what we're consuming.
Yeah, and what and when you see Alegria, I always have to do like this thing. When you see Alegria,
it's like the next like Camila Cabello song.
Oh, yes, probably. But if you see Alegria, just realize that you're also being
Alegria una na.
Fuck off. Just realize that you're being sold something, and that it's not just a cute illustration. It's selling you the idea of joy and trustworthiness. And I think it would be in the best interest of all of us if we start realizing that.
The Spoiled Broth was brought to you by Yahira Brita-Morpher and Jemima Vaughan. Our intro and outro music was made by Brian Murphy, and we want to thank everyone who advises us on making the podcast. Hope to see you next time.